June 29, 2024. We're saying the last picture of D.C. ought not be people tearing the Capitol up and trying to tear democracy down. We need a picture of folk trying to build a democracy up and lift up all people, regardless of who they are. June the 29th on Pennsylvania and 3rd.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap duo Dead Prez. And this is WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
Like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
Put the finger roll! Push the foul!
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Boom, shalak, lock, boom. Welcome to the Collision. This is where I talk with Chuck Modiano and Etan Thomas about all the ways that sports and politics collide. So excited for this week's show. Chuck Modiano, how you doing, sir?
Boom, shalak, lock, boom. I'm doing all right, DZ.
Man, we have so much to talk about this week. We need to talk about the passing of, I'm calling it the three W's, Chuck. Bill Walton, Jerry West, and the person not enough people are talking about, Chet Walker. Oh. Three basketball legends, three people who have passed. We are also going to talk about the finals, what the heck has happened to the Dallas Mavericks. And then at 10:30 a.m., 10-year veteran and our compadre on the show, Etan Thomas, is coming on to speak about the WNBA and all things Caitlin Clark. How does that sound, Chuck?
It sounds great to me. There's a lot to talk about.
There's so much to talk about. But first, you know, we always have Gaza on the mind. Before we start talking about Bill Walton, Chet Walker, Jerry West, maybe not in that order, I want to, Chuck, if you could speak a little bit about the demonstration you attended Saturday, the Red Line demonstration. Just give us a quick rundown so our audience knows what's going on in these streets.
Oh, it was amazing on Saturday. And basically, you saw thousands out there outside the White House unfurling. It had to be over a mile long banner all the way around the White House. I know because I walked it and I started interviewing people as I walked all around. And it took a long time to walk all around. And people were there and thousands were in the street. And for those who don't know the context, it is that Joe Biden said publicly, sternly, firmly, that if there was any invasion into Rafah by Israel, that's where he draws the red line. And it turns out there was no red line, which is not a surprise.
None.
So the people came out to draw that red line for, to remind the president about what he said. But, you know, this president says one thing and does another. has some words and has a budget that are not in accord with one another. And at every moment, we have to remind him, but more importantly, bring the people together to keep rising up to say no to genocide, to say we have to stop this genocide in a growing global movement.
Amazing. And how are people about wearing those red shirts?
You know, I only had one red shirt, and it was when I bought it the time the Mystics won the championship. I was at the championship game that the Mystics won. And so that's what I had. But yeah, it was a sea of red. It was a sea of red. And yeah, it was fine. It was fine. I've never seen so much red in my life. But you also saw a lot of blood out there, and it was a very spirited movement. People had really positive energy. And I should also add, afterwards, there was a trial around the ellipse, and where thousands attended. And Joe Biden and Netanyahu and Anthony Blinken, Butcher Blinken, were all put on trial with many facts that were laid out. And as you might guess, they were found guilty as charged on all counts. And because it's obvious, there's really nothing to talk about. There's never been an easier trial to be had in the history of America, I guess. I don't know. But listen, it was an incredible day, and we have a rogue government who is protecting another rogue government.
And inviting the head of that rogue government to speak in front of Congress, too.
Oh, and we'll be back, by the way. We'll be back there. As July 24th, am I right? We will be
yeah.
25th. Yeah, we will be back there. You'll see another red line. I mean, it's disgusting. You're talking about a unapologetic mass murderer that you are inviting in front of Congress. And this comes about 2 months after Yoav Gallant was invited to speak with Jake Sullivan and others at the White House. And Yoav Gallant, for those people who don't know, is the Israeli IDF leader who said Palestinians are human animals and we will act accordingly. And, you know, that's that language is reminiscent of Holocaust language. You know, Jews,
the language of genocide,
the language of genocide, the language of Joseph Goebbels, who said Jews were rats, where Jews were vermin, Jews were lice. This was the language. You have to dehumanize so that you could make genocide possible.
Mm. And before we get on to the sports, thank you for that, Chuck. That's so important, the way you laid that out. And Gaza is always on our mind on this show, even when we talk sports and politics. A special gas face, that's a negative thing, I got to say, to Hillary Clinton, who yesterday endorsed George Latimer over Jamal Bowman. In Congress, George Latimer, Islamophobic, anti-Arab, and hardcore Netanyahu supporter, hardcore supporter of Israel. And Jamal Bowman, you know, somebody who, as a member of the squad, has spoken out against what's happening in Gaza. And here's Hillary Clinton putting her finger on the scale, violating what I thought was a Democratic Party truism, which is you don't endorse challengers of incumbents. But gee, I guess when it comes to Zionism, all of that's out the window.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a lie that has been made up. You don't challenge incumbents.
It's a way to marginalize the left.
Yes, it's a way to marginalize them. Because let's look at what you just said. If you go back a couple of years when Jessica Cisneros, in the heat of the Roe v. Wade protests that were in the street to protest the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Jessica Cisneros was right there running against Henry Cuellar, who was the lone Democrat who not just pro-NRA, but was against abortion. And he was against pro-choice. And what did Nancy Pelosi, Akeem Jeffries, and four of the five top Democrats do? Not only did they endorse Cuellar, but they campaign for him in a very razor close election. So when it comes to a right winger and someone who with progressive left justice minded principles, even Roe v. Wade, which they campaign on in every other email, we know which way they go. And when you asked about it, well, why are you supporting the lone Congress per Democrat who's favoring this, their answer was, well, it's a policy to stay with the incumbent. And then when we see it's reversed and you have a progressive policy from an incumbent that is against genocide like Bowman, we don't see that logic anymore. The bottom line is the Democrat establishment will side with the right-wing Republicans any day of the week versus a progressive left campaign. And we see that time and time again. And we see bad things happening to whether it's Rashida Tlaib or Cori Bush because they're not following the AIPAC law.
Well said, Chuck. Well said indeed. You know, I'm so glad that we start the show this way. This is the place where sports and politics come together. But we know there's a real world out there. And even if the sports world's not covering that real world, we're going to talk about it. Even if the sports world is not covering the fact that this week, Chuck, the first Palestinian to ever compete in the Olympics, 1996 long-distance runner Majed Abu Marahil, was killed this past week because of the Israeli blockade, unable to receive medical treatment for kidney failure. 61 years old, and I don't expect this to be covered on SportsCenter. We have to talk about we have to pay our respects right now. And I know that was heavy, and I know what I'm going to talk about is heavy, but we pay our respects on WPFW. And we've lost three W's in the NBA, and that's kind of appropriate, three wins. And I'd like to talk about them, run through them, Chuck, in the order, in the reverse order in which they passed. So we go to the most recent. I want us to say a few words before we talk about the finals about Jerry West, Chet Walker, Bill Walton. We talked a little bit about Walton last week with the coach, Kevin McNutt. But we do need to, you and I need to speak about Bill Walton as well. But let's start with Jerry West. Name association for you, Chuck. What comes to mind both on the court but also socially when you think of Jerry West?
Well, you know, Jerry West, first of all, is a giant of the game. Let me just talk about his basketball prowess. He's a giant of the game. And, you know, I have this thing where I try to see this, will a great one translate to any era? And I think we had this conversation before, and I look at, well, what do they do in the playoffs versus the regular season when defense is twice as tight, harder. And the great ones don't have a lower shooting percentage. They have basically the same shooting percentage. If you can't stop Kareem's skyhook in the regular season, you can't stop it in the postseason. And Jerry West, such a sharp shooter and very athletic that I don't think people realize because, you know, I believe sometimes racial reasons, very athletic and a sharp shooter. His percentage stayed very high, whether it was in the regular season or in the postseason. And I think he would dominate in any era. And you can make the argument, being that he is such a good GM, may arguably the best GM in that discussion with your Red Hornback, Pat Riley. You can make that argument as well. So when you take the breadth of his career, short stint as coach, it's just an incredible career. But to answer your question, I think what stands out for me that I don't think a lot of people don't know about is in the 60s, there was a 1964 boycott of the All-Star game. And it was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was really led by Elgin Baylor. You know, Oscar Robertson was always in the mix. And they were like, we're not going to play this game until we get a players union, until we get a pension. And, you know, the execs came to them and put the fear of God in them. And they say, if you go through with boycotting this All-Star game, this is like happening half an hour before the game, mind you. If you go through with this, you'll never see another game again. They said that to Jerry. They said that to Elgin. And Jerry tells a story. And Jerry's like, you know, he's kind of a little bit nervous. I'm never going to play again. And he talks to Elgin. And he had great respect for Elgin, who he often talks about. And Elgin never gets the credit for the activist work that he does. And they had a conversation. The Oscars involved. And the black players at that time, Bill Russell, we're not playing. And Jerry West is the most famous white player. He's the biggest white player. And he said, they're not playing, I'm not playing. And they had entire solidarity of that team at a time where all their careers could have been over in a blink. And what happened was that was a seminal moment, in the words of Jerry West and others, because they got that pension. They started a players union. And you know, Oscar Robertson took the reins from there. And unfortunately, it hurt his entire post career. But that moment is not known in activist history. And it needed everyone's solidarity. And it specifically needed Jerry West's solidarity as the best white player in basketball at that time.
Well put. I'm going to give you some numbers regarding Jerry West,
okay,
which to me speaks to his importance. First number is 14. 14 is the number of years that Jerry West played in the NBA, and 14 is the number of all-star games that he made. 14 for 14. Good gracious. Even Kareem just went 19 for 20. I mean,
yeah.
14 for 14 is otherworldly. Okay, another number, 3. That's the number of times, and no one has touched this, that Jerry West has been inducted into the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. 3 times. Player, executive, and then a second executive one for the work he did after getting into the Hall of Fame as an executive. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
3 Hall of Fame inductions for Jerry West. Here's another number for you. 2. 2, because he had 2 nicknames, and to me, they're 2 of the top nicknames in the history of sports.
Mm-hmm.
He was the logo, because it's believed that the logo of the NBA is a silhouette of Jerry West, and Mr. Clutch.
That's right.
Which is, I always thought Mr. Clutch was interesting, because you know, he also famously just, I think he had 9 finals appearances, 8 finals appearances, and he only won 1 chip. He's also the only person to ever win MVP of the finals on the losing team.
That's right, 69.
Mm.
Balled out.
Amazing. And he said that was like the worst moment of his life.
Right.
Was having to accept that trophy, which I get. And then here's my last number here is... Oh, and I'm going to go back to talking about him as the logo in a second. Actually, let me just jump into it now. There's a famous story about Stephen A. Smith getting on the air and fulminating. And I'm not a Stephen A. Smith fan, to put it mildly. But he was fulminating in the mid-90s about Michael Jordan should be the logo, not Jerry West. Mm-hmm. And Jerry West got in touch with him. And Stephen A. Smith thought Jerry West was calling him to reprimand him or something. Yeah. And Jerry West was like, yeah.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's true. You know, Jerry West is really a player. He lacks an ego. He said it should have been Elgin. I remember I've heard on occasion he said, you know, he felt funny about it. It really should have been Elgin. And and he just speaks with Elgin about Elgin Baylor with such reverence, and he saw what Elgin had to go through. Jerry West is just a great person to listen to and listen to his stories. And I want to recommend a book which he talks about throughout. It's called Hard Labor by Sam Smith, where they talk about the 60s and what they had to do to get unionized and get contracts. It's Oscar Robertson is prominent in the book, and all the millionaires today in the NBA, you know, owe something to those players and what they sacrificed in the 60s.
Wow. You just got me. I've never read that book.
Oh, it's
and
great.
I like Sam Smith. I'm all over it. Hard Labor. You know what I'm recommending? You said Hard Labor, right?
Yes, it's hard. You'll love it. DZ, you're going to love it. I mean, Sam Smith is a great writer. He's known for the Jordan Rules and all of that.
Yes,
you will love this book. You will love it.
And I love the Jordan Rules, so I'm on it. Yeah. You know, my last number was actually book related as well. You know, 2 was the number of incredible nicknames he had. 1 was his memoir, which I was going to recommend. He only wrote 1 memoir, as one should, even though they put him in the Hall of Fame twice for being an executive. He said, oh, just 1 memoir. And it's called West on West, written with Jonathan Coleman. And in it, it's one of the most emotionally naked sports memoirs ever written, if not the most.
He's very vulnerable when he's speaking. He's very introspective. There's something about which it's very rare that, you know, that's not really an athlete trait, because an athlete is not trained to be introspective. You know, a Tom Thomas is introspective. Athlete is just trained to win and cut your throat, not be introspective.
Yeah, and Jerry West spoke deeply about depression in his family, all sorts of tragedy in his family, depression in himself. I mean, he really did wrestle with his own mental wellness throughout. I mean, it's famous, like in his coaching career, how much it took out of him. And his persona as somebody who later in life was willing to talk about depression, coming from the generation that he came from, I'll always believe save lives. So a tip of the hat to Jerry West.
Tip of the hat. One more tip before you get to Chet.
Yes.
Because, you know, I thought I did watch the whole Laker special and I like gratuitously enjoyed it, but there were things I didn't like about it. I didn't like, you know, the treatment of West in there. I didn't like the treatment of Kareem in there. And I thought all the good parts of that series.
You're talking about Winning Time, the dramatization.
Winning Time. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Winning Time. And I think all of the great parts of that series would have stood on its own without some of the gratuitous parts or making people who they weren't. And they made, you know, him as someone who could never be happy. But if you actually listen to what he said and he goes through depression, like they just have, oh, he won a championship. He's not happy. Right. Oh, this guy can't be happy. But, you know, I saw a conversation with Jerry West. He said, I was so unhappy after we won a championship, the first one. And you know what he said after that? Because Elgin Baylor deserved one, and he wasn't on the team. He was let go. He was injured, you know, early on in that season. And with everything Elgin sacrificed and with giving up his needs, at this time, which people would naturally be selfish, he's thinking the great of the game, like Elgin, should be getting this. So even that is introspective. It's selfless. And when you make a caricature, it's just some guy can never be happy and understand that there's a connection there. I mean, in a way, that's a kind of a beautiful thing to say that he was thinking of Elgin so deeply. You know what I mean?
Best friends, as they were. And when Elgin died, I mean, Jerry West's words, people should look those up. They need to be read as well. Elgin Baylor, of course, a D.C. guy. Shout out to the DMV always for our basketball tradition. Moving on to Chet Walker. Chet the Jet. Yes. I don't know how much you know about Chet Walker, Chuck.
He's a great one. He's a great. You ever hear Will talk about Chet Walker?
Yeah. Chet Walker, 7 All-Star appearances in 13 years. But a political edge to Chet Walker, too, that we need to talk about. First of all, Chuck, you mentioned a book I didn't read. I've got a book for you.
Okay.
The Chet Walker memoir. It's called Long Time Coming, A Black Athlete's Coming of Age in America. Very
I have it, and I never
hard
read
to
it.
Find.
But
really,
it's on my
you
shelf.
Have it.
It's on my shelf, and I've never read it. One of the many books that I've never read that's on my shelf.
I have so many. If I had a nickel for every book I have not read that's on my shelf,
I
wouldn't have to read ever
be,
again.
You know how smart I would be if I read all the books that I own? Oh, my goodness. I'd be so smart. Right.
I'd like to read something, if I could, from Please. Chet's book, Long Time Coming. And this is about his experiences at Bradley University in the 1960s, in 1960. I'm just going to read this. And the fact that he put this out there is just really wonderful. Bradley's first road trip in 1960 began in St. Louis. Before the game that night, the St. Louis University marched out playing Dixie, and we came out on the court surrounded by a sea of waving Confederate flags, which almost made me sick to my stomach. To me, going onto that court was like running headlong into a military rally. That's an interesting phrase in the 1970s to say. During warmups for the Houston game, fans threw lit cigarette butts on the floor at us and screamed the N-word. I was in a state of great confusion and frustration and scored only 1 point in the first half, wondering why I was subjecting myself to such abuse. At halftime, Coach had a different take on the game. He berated me, yelling, "Don't quit on me, Chet. Just don't quit on me." For the final sneer, he concluded more softly, "All-American, my bleep." My fleeting sense of equality was gone. Heaven help me if I permanently lost the ability to play basketball. Sometimes I feel Branch Rickey should have given Jackie permission to punch somebody's lights out. The incident might have resulted in a race riot, the end of the great experiment. But suppose not. Suppose that Robinson's courage had validated an outward expression of anger. Suppose it acknowledged that Jackie had a right to express that anger instead of being lionized for withholding it. Because Jackie had the great strength to endure, he set a precedent. All black athletes since, though, have had to live up to his powerful dignity and forbearance. But my soul died a little each time a nightmare like that Southern trip had to be lived through.
Wow. That's so real.
Isn't that something?
That is so real.
I've never read any other athlete be like, Jackie should have punched somebody. Because it might have made things easier. It might have ended everything. But it also might have made things easier for the rest of us coming through. That is a powerful lens to think about it. And the word lionized, about Jackie being lionized for not punching, actually has a deleterious effect on people who coming up next.
That's right. Powerful. Wow, that's deep. That is very powerful. And he's certainly not the only one to feel that way.
Wow.
You talk to any black athlete, he always gets like that. I could never done did what you know Jackie did and whatnot. I would have punched someone in the face.
Athletes say that a lot, but they usually say it with a sort of like smile and a shake of the head saying, wow, Jackie really must have had some bravery and fortitude to not do it because I couldn't have done it.
Right.
Here's Chet saying he should have done it.
Yeah, right. Who knows?
That's
maybe a powerful been better, statement. You know?
It's just a powerful statement. I don't know if I agree with it or disagree with it, but I'm just saying the courage to put that out there. And he would have put that out there just a few years after Jackie's passing. That's when this book came out. It's pretty intense. There's more quotes as well. I'm not going to read them, but that's just my way of saying long time coming, a black athlete's coming of age in America is amazing. And Chet Walker, of course, we talk about on this show a lot, Chuck, about how nobody talks about Oscar Robertson and the role he played in labor. Heck, you just referenced it a few minutes ago. And that's not the first time we've given Oscar his flowers for actually doing so much for labor, and yet nobody talks about him the way we rightly talk about Curt Flood. But Chet the Jet Walker, do you know his career ended in 1975 after suing the league? Because he felt like the Chicago Bulls were reneging on their contract to him. And then as soon as he left the Chicago Bulls, the team went from being a powerful, powerful playoff contender to going right through the floor. He was so key to that special sauce. And his career ended after suing the Bulls. That's no one would sign him after suing the Bulls. His career was just done involuntarily. And then here's Chet the Jet Walker, you know, the sidekick of Wilt the Stilt, legend in the game. It took him until 2012 to get into the Hall of Fame. Think about that.
That's ridiculous. That I remember being very, very angry for a long time about that, because I mean that's a no-brainer. And you know, he was such a key piece of the great 68-13 Wilt Sixers team. He was a key piece. He was dropping 22 a game in that series in during those playoffs. Wilt was deferring to Chet on the scoring and passing it out to him, and the discussion we're having, but you're right, he was hurt by the same way Oscar Robertson whole career was hurt by his activism. And since we're dropping books, Blackball, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Spencer Haywood, and the Generation That Saved the Soul of the NBA by Teresa Runstetler. Oh my God, that's just an incredible history of what a really untold history of the black activists in basketball, what they went through to get paid, and that they not put themselves on the line. Then the NBA and sports look very different today. This process started before Curt Flood, right? Even so, it's just untold. But that's a wonderful book. I was like, many times I'm raising my eyebrow. I was like, wow, okay. I learned something.
Teresa Runstetler, who I've interviewed about the book actually on several occasions.
I think we had her on here.
Yes, we did. We absolutely did, because she's actually a local professor here in the D.C. area. I love that we've shouted out Elgin Baylor and Teresa Runstetler as local. Only on The Collision do you hear local D.C. name drops of Elgin Baylor and Teresa Runstetler in the same segment. Well, this was terrific, Chuck. I definitely want to ask Etan Thomas, who we have coming in on the other side, certainly his thoughts on Jerry West before we speak about the WNBA and Caitlin Clark and everything that involves that. And maybe, just maybe, Jeepers Creepers will have time to give some of our thoughts about the NBA Finals. Oh, my goodness, the collision where sometimes I think we have to go backwards in order to go forwards. We'll be back right after this on The Collision, only on WPFW, where sports and politics collide. That's The Collision and WPFW, changing the world one broadcast at a time. Your home for jazz and justice. We'll be back right after this with Etan Thomas. Scientists mentally scarred, triple extra large, wild like rock stars who smash guitars, poison bars from the guards, bust holes in your mirage, catch a charge, take them down like the riot squad, invade your zone, ruin like ancient Rome, I span the universe and return to earth to claim my throne, the maker, owner, plus sole controller, Ayatollah rest in the sky, the clouds my sofa, stand like colossus, regardless to whom or what, numerous attempts in my life, so who to trust, who but us? Supplier with the fire, the burning truth, 150 absolute proof on the mic like Moses, spoken golden scribe, survivor of the oldest tribe who soldiers die. I know the five families, we shed tears and mourn, but our hands are on the ammo cause the battle's still on. Sound the horn, we come rumbling through the function, precise laser beam technique to touch something. When we die hard, they build a monument to honor us with. Humongous effect in the world, we could have conquered it. Above the crowds, above the clouds, where the sounds are original. Infinite skills create miracles. Warrior spiritual. Above the clouds, rain it down. We are back here on The Collision. He's Chuck Modiano. Hello, Chuck.
Yes.
I'm Dave Zirin.
And Etan.
If you've listened to this show, you know that the beating heart and soul of it is Etan Thomas, 10-year NBA veteran. So glad. I know he's busy these days. So glad to get him on the back end here. So much to discuss. Etan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How are y'all doing?
Oh, man, it's great to hear your voice. Look, we know we want to talk about the WNBA. We know we want to talk about Caitlin Clark. We want to know we want to talk about all the machinations of how she's being viewed culturally at this moment. But before we do, gotta ask you, as a 10-year vet of the L, what your thoughts were when you heard that the logo, Mr. Clutch, Jerry West, passed away?
Oh wow, you know, it was one of those things where he's a legend, and you start going back to some of the history that he has, you know, as a part of in this league. There's a reason why he's the legend. You know, why he's the logo. It's interesting because a lot of the younger players don't know as much about the history as I think that they should. I think they're introduced to a history through video games, which is interesting. So playing with like the classic teams, you know, they get to see, wow, you know, this player was this player is this. So they're playing with Bill Walton. They're playing with, you know, Jerry West. They're playing with, so they have a little bit of an understanding of how special they were. And then they can research, you know what I mean? So that's what I'm seeing a lot through social media, always trying to figure out some kind of positive spin with social media because so much of it's so toxic. So, you know, something. But I mean, the interesting part about Jerry West, you know, and I saw this conversation with young people online, and they were talking about how he was the only player to win the NBA Finals MVP on a losing team.
Yes.
Nobody else has done that. And, you know, you talk about the how they struggled against the Celtics, but then how he shined and how much he must have been shining for to win the MVP being on the losing team. So he's a legend. So it definitely was a, you know, a great loss to lose a legend like that.
No, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, somebody who is known for so many different reasons. We talked about the fact he's the only person in the Basketball Hall of Fame on three separate occasions he was inducted. That's just bonkers. But you know, all respect to the logo, Mr. Clutch, Jerry West, on your transition. So Etan Thomas.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
If you had said to me 6 months ago, give me a word association with or a thought association with Caitlin Clark, I would have just been like, amazing player, range up to 28 feet, people around the block to see Iowa games. That's all I really would have said. But now, if you say the name Caitlin Clark, I think different thoughts are erupting in the collective mind. Oftentimes, very different based on what someone's politics happen to be in approaching both the WNBA and Caitlin Clark. So I ask you, Etan Thomas, Caitlin Clark, what comes through your mind right now? What's the thought bubble?
I mean, honestly, I think she's being weaponized by the right in a way that, we haven't really seen this in the WNBA ever. And before, maybe 2 years ago, as she was in college, it was a little bit more of the, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson type of rivalry that was a little bit of a play on the racial dynamic as far as, It was that's kind of where it was teetering to. But then you had, one reporter, describe in certain context, and I can't remember the name offhand, but I think he was with the LA Times, but it was something to the effect that they were the good guys, and they were.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember the quote, exactly, but then Scott LSU or whatever team is like the menaces, the violent, and it was just, and you're like, whoa. So I think that's like where I kind of started seeing it a little bit more. I mean, of course, we saw when they lost, and I think Joe Biden actually suggested, why don't we invite both of them to the White House? I was like, whoa, when does that ever happen? So I had to Google it. I was like, okay, maybe that's happened before and I didn't know. And sure enough, no, that's never happened. And you just started seeing a little bit more things creep in and more. But, fast forward to now, and it's like, the accusations of, that people are, targeting her, and they don't like her because she's white, and she just left off the Olympic team because of racism, and, all these different things that I'm hearing. And of course you have to take into consideration the people who are saying it, the Outkick, the Fox News, but even more than just them, you're seeing it echoed so much on social media, and you're just like, wow, this is changing into something completely different. But then you have, the fact that she is this phenomenon, and she didn't ask for any of this. I can't necessarily, say that I can fault her for this, even though you can ask, well, should she say something publicly, please don't weaponize me like this. Just let me play basketball. But I don't necessarily blame her, because all she's been doing is trying to find her way as a rookie, a talented rookie, like many rookies have before. She has good games. She has not so good games. You know what I mean? I mean, she struggles. She's not as strong as some of the players that she's playing against. She's, she gets roughed up like all rookies get roughed up when they come in. But the narrative that is formed around her has been something that, that's the only way I could say it's the word association, what you asked for was just she's being weaponized.
Yeah, two points I want to add to that when we talk about her being weaponized by the right. But as you said, and this is really important, it's not just the Fox News, the reactionary sewers of social media. I mean, it's more widespread, this kind of we must protect Caitlin in this, let's be honest, in this black league, this rough and tumble black league, she must be protected somehow, like she's made of porcelain, which, as you said, does her no favors, especially trying to acclimate herself to a new kind of sorority of players. That ain't good. But the two examples that really sing out to me, which did Caitlin Clark no favors, is when the Chicago Tribune put out an editorial, not by an editorial writer, Etan, but like the paper's editorial, saying that what Sinead Carter did to Caitlin Clark in knocking her down with a hip check should be pursued as a criminal charge of assault.
Right.
Wow.
That's wild to me. And let's remember, please, that Sinead Carter plays for Chicago. So it was her hometown paper.
Yeah.
And saying that 2 days earlier, their own player, Angel Reese, was taken down by Alyssa Thomas with her arm around her throat and slammed down. And they didn't come run to Angel Reese's aid. That was a much harder foul. And that was their own player. And don't the Chicago Blackhawks play in Chicago?
Yeah. And I'll throw this on to you as well. Jim Banks, who is a right-wing congressperson who's to the right of Genghis Khan, he talked about it's not going to happen, but it just says something that he said it, a congressional committee to discuss the targeting of Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. I mean, the white grievance is so much, I can't believe it. I haven't seen this many white tears since they took MASH off the air. That's Chris Rock's joke. I got it with me. But still, you get what I'm saying here. It's unbelievable what they're foisting on her shoulders. But I want to hear what y'all think more. I'm sorry for filibustering, but I want to ask this question, because this is really where the shove comes to push. They're putting all this on Caitlin Clark as being like this symbol of everything we're talking about. Does she have a responsibility to now speak out against what others are foisting upon her? Or is that also unfair to ask of her?
It's tough. You know what I mean? Because she knows she's being weaponized, but at the same time, you know, she's packing out arenas with fans that are, you know what I mean, cheering her on, and that's part of tied into marketing. So does she do something to kind of squash that? I mean, I posed the question before, and I still definitely stand by it, but all these people that are weaponizing her, let her say something that they don't agree with and see how quickly they turn on her.
Oh, yes.
You know, I mean, like, blink of an eye, they will turn on her. Whatever it is, it doesn't have to be as you know, bold as Black Lives Matter. I'm not, you know, saying that, but anything that she says that doesn't fit their agenda where they placed her, and everything will change. And it's interesting because there when the claim of racism was going around, you know, for her being left off the Olympic team, although mm-hmm. you have Kelsey Plum, you have Breonna Stewart, you have Sabrina, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, I don't want to mess it up, but you have Diana Taurasi, you have white players on the team, but mm-hmm. they are, when I say they, I mean the Caitlin Clark fanatics, that her base, that right wing base that have been weaponizing her, they're not supporting them the way that they're supporting Caitlin Clark. So then you have to ask the question, why mm-hmm. what makes her different, you know, than them for their, you know, I didn't see, you know, Paige get this level of support, but I did see her at the ESPYs talk about, you know, putting the focus on Black women and how that, you know, should happen, and she paid homage to the Black women that came before her and everything like that, and it didn't seem like she lost all of his followers. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't support her that same way, and she's been killing. So what is it about her that is she like the perfect candidate for them to weaponize? Like, I need y'all help with this, because there have been many great white players in the WNBA before her. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What is it about her?
Well, I've got thoughts, as you might imagine. I think what it is, first of all, is that Caitlin Clark really through. I think some of this is related to just the time she's coming up. Just like Michael Jordan came up at the time of the sneaker, and after Magic and Larry had laid a groundwork, pulling the league out of the doldrums, it was like perfect person for perfect time, perfect place. Mm-hmm. I think that's very similar to Caitlin Clark, like coming in at a time where she could do television commercials as an Iowa player and fully, you know, because of NIL and all that, like she can fully market herself as a social phenomenon before she even got to the WNBA, which in a lot of ways, again, you got to wonder big picture if that did her any favors. You know, you couple that with our recent obsession in the Steph Curry era with the long distance bombing and the way that that's been integrated into the sport. And now you have a female player who's comfortable from 28 feet out, which then becomes like this in the cultural mind, like, whoa, you know, we're seeing what Steph does. You know, she's pulling up from the logo doing this. So she becomes like this social phenomenon. And then what happens way too much now. So what I just said was very particular for 2023, 2024, but then you have to go back 100 years. And this is great white hopeism. You know, the same way that Jack Johnson had to deal with this over 110 years ago. You know, the same way that so many athletes have had to deal with it. Jerry Cooney coming in against Larry Holmes. I mean, the great white hope trope. Larry Bird, of course, you know, is something that is thrown on white athletes. And I got to be honest with you, Bill Walton, I guess Paige, you got to count Paige too now and give Paige Beckers her flowers for this. But Bill Walton recently passed away, in the early 70s, he's one of the few people I've ever heard as a young white athlete reject openly turning him into a great white hope. And you wonder if that's a step that Caitlin Clark needs to make. You wonder if she needs to disavow some of these people who frankly sound like they've never watched a women's basketball game before this year.
Because they have.
And have all of a sudden discovered it with Caitlin Clark. And now Caitlin Clark is caught up in a swirl of great white hopeism because they're trying to attach themselves to her star because she's coming up in 2024 as this social phenomenon. Chuck, throwing it to you. Do you have any thoughts to Eitan's query?
Yeah, I mean, if you asked me, 2 months ago, I would just be like, it's great. She's bringing publicity to the league, but now it's getting so dangerous. And we all know why we're here, or even on this show. We know culture precedes politics. And she's moving the needle, and there are opportunists coming after her and weaponizing her whiteness. And let me be clear about when I say Caitlin Clark bait, okay? Let's assume half of them, and I don't know what the percentage is, but let's assume half of them would have come over if she was bawling out and she was black, okay? So I'm not talking about that half. If you would have come over, I'm not talking about people who came for her greatness. I'm talking about people who came for her whiteness, very specifically her whiteness. And we're talking about this
I have to interrupt you, Chuck. I have to interrupt you, Chuck, because you just said something that's highlight worthy. You said people who don't come for her greatness but come for her whiteness. I'm sorry. Please continue. Please continue. That was important.
Yeah. But it's what it is. And that crowd, and this is a crowd, I don't think there's actually a perfect historical parallel. You hit them, but we're all on men. And there's a white woman dynamic here that is very specific and has very specific history in America, a very ugly history in America. So this white woman, who is that base? Who are the Caitlin Cotlers? They're mostly men. And then even if you go deeper, the mostly white men, but they're mostly men. They're crying about this foul was too hard. They see their daughter being fouled. And I don't mean their 22-year-old daughter. I mean their 5-year-old daughter. That is what they are seeing. They don't see a fierce athlete. She's 22, the number one pick. Anthony Edwards is 22, the number one pick. They don't see a foul on Anthony Edwards the same as they do on Caitlin or on Angel Reese. And we have to know what's behind this. Why are all of these people going bananas over a Draymond on a Tuesday foul? But now you've got a problem with it. Well, we need to explore that in some therapy. But we don't have that kind of time because we have a very ugly history in America of how white people corral around the thought of a woman being violated. And we have a long history of lynching. And if you go to the root of it, and you go to the root of the civil rights movement, it's that Emmett Till whistled at Carolyn Bryant, which was a lie, by the way. But that whistling at Carolyn Bryant to defend her honor led to what happened to Emmett Till. Now, that's not going to happen today, but I think we're seeing the remnants of that history now because normal people are losing their mind over a hip check. And you have to wonder what went in your mind, what craziness went in your mind that you're talking so silly, so dangerously, that if you told me a month ago, is all publicity good? I would say yes. And now all publicity is not good publicity. I'm glad she's not on the Olympic team. She doesn't deserve to be there. We get it. But I'm glad she's not on there for marketing reasons too, because we all know what would happen. She would get 7 minutes a game like Leitner, and this crowd would all have a riot, and Trump would weigh in, and Nikki Haley would weigh in, and MTG would weigh in, and it would be just nuts. So even on the marketing claim that people are talking about, I think that's a bad idea too.
Well, one of the things that we have to be able to, you know, understand, like, you know, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's the home of the Tulsa Race Massacre, and the entire story behind what happened was the thought that a white woman was violated in any type of way by a black man. And that led to just even the thought, no proof, no anything, like just the thought, the rumor that that's what happened led to them burning down an entire neighborhood that was booming on a whole different level in 1921, you know, of Greenwood. And that is kind of the sentiment that I heard of the anger being kind of hurled towards Chinedu Carter after her hip check. Now, people say, oh, that's a big jump. All you gotta do is look on social media and see the level of, they're like, oh, she should be snatched out of the arena. She should be arrested, like what you said, that the writer wrote, that she, it's assault. Is that, those words are used for a reason. And there's a reason why those words were never used on an Angel Reese or any other black player that was filed for any reason whatsoever. That black player fouling that white woman was viewed completely differently. And that's the ugly side of this. It's not simply just, you know, when an athlete starts to excel in a particular sport where they aren't necessarily predominantly excelling in, you see people who share the same, you know, whatever race, religion, culture, whatever of that athlete, start supporting that athlete a little bit more. You know what I mean? Start, you know, when we saw Serena Williams coming, oh, Serena Williams, she's doing, you know, saw, you know, Naomi Osaka. We saw, you know, even when I was little, seeing Zena Garrison, like that. But this is something different, though. Yep. This is where it's almost a hatred for everybody else, and nobody else exists except for the person that they are pouring all their eggs into, which is Caitlin Clark, the great white hype, a great white hope, whichever word you want to use. And that's the part where the weaponizing starts to come in. And I don't really see it changing or stopping unless she says something that they disagree with. I think that's the only thing that'll make this stop. Because even if she plays a terrible game and scores 3 points and goes 1 for 15, they're still praising her. You know what I mean? Yeah. So she can do no wrong right now except for that.
She has to shut it. I do believe she has to shut it down, DZ.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think it is fascinating that the people, it's all these men who, it's like they've never watched the sport before, who are like, Caitlin Clark needs to get in the Olympics. Kennedy Carter needs to see the inside of a jail cell. And yet the women who have been trying to get people to notice the WNBA forever, like Rebecca Lobo, for example, like Monica McNutt, friend of our program, like they are the ones saying, no, she should not be on the Olympic team, even if it draws in new eyeballs, because that's not how our league should run. It should not run that way. It's got to be the people who have the merit to be on this team. And that's just not Caitlin Clark right now. And frankly, she needs the month off anyway. But that's me saying that. I mean, goodness gracious. That's one thing about the women's game going nonstop from the NCAA tournament right into the WNBA season. That's a load for a rookie. Take the month, please. Take it off. Get better. And to get what Chuck said, we're wrapping up the show, so I got to give my 2 cents on this. Absolutely, she needs to say something. Absolutely. She needs to talk. I mean, it's a heavy burden, but, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown, and she's been crowned. So she's got to say something. It doesn't have to be what Paige Becker said, but it has to be in that vein of just saying, I do not accept the way people are weaponizing me in this sport. I do not accept it, and it does me no favors. She's got to say something like that. That's my take, Etan. What's your last word on this?
Yeah, I hear you. I just don't know if that's going to happen. I have my doubts that that's going to happen, but I do think that it should happen. That's my take.
It should happen because we've reached that point. Maybe it shouldn't have. I would have said something different before the Olympic stuff, but it's just gone a step into such a fanatical direction. She needs to say something about this. Chuck, your thoughts. Do you agree with us or not?
I absolutely agree. She needs to say something. She needs to shut it down. And I think she has it in her because after the first Angel Reese incident when LSU won the championship, they came to her and they're like, no, it's no big deal. She played it off. Everyone was going crazy on Angel Reese for doing the same thing that Caitlin Clark did. And Caitlin Clark could talk trash with the best of them. So she has a certain she's cognizant of this on some level, and it's going to really be up to her to say, listen, stop treating me like I'm 5 years old. Stop coddling me. I'm grown, and I play in a grown league. Leave me alone. Let's play ball.
I agree. I would love to hear her say that. I agree.
That would be not just nice, but that would be important, because the one thing that I think we all think but aren't saying is why is it so more vicious now than even in the days of, you know, Zena Garrison, as you said, like, why does it feel worse? I mean, it's because society is getting worse and more polarized. So she has a chance to be part of that polarization, part of that bigotry, or she can be somebody who actually stands up to it. And I certainly hope she chooses the latter. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Etan Thomas, thank you so much, man. Great to talk to you.
Always great to talk to you.
Always. Awesome. Chuck, you as well, man. Great to talk to you as well. Love talking Chet the Jet Walker. Rest in peace. Bill Walton, Chet Walker, Jerry West, everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace. Thinking of a bank to pull some banking because I'm dead and stinking. So's all my shoes winking, t-shirt is shrinking. Soon I see some thighs and my eyes open wide quick. Who's that with the chick? Bill blast my sidekick. What's up, Black? Give his hand a smack. Then up pulls a Cadillac. Yo, baby, we'll be back. Jump right on the side. Not too many people sure. I'm thinking about who gotta get robbed because the mob got a job for us.
Very often, Juneteenth is presented as a story of news of the Emancipation Proclamation traveling slowly to the Deep South in Texas. But it was really a story of power traveling slowly and of freedom being seized. On Wednesday, June 19th, WPFW presents Emancipated Spirits, Slavery, Freedom, and Resistance from 5 a.m. until midnight. Through discussions, music, and spoken word, we will interrogate the history of that day, the true meaning of freedom, and the role resistance continues to play in securing liberation. That's Emancipated Spirits, Slavery, Freedom, and Resistance, Wednesday, June 19th, 5 a.m. until midnight, on WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
The Pacifica National Board and the WPFW Local Station Board will be voting on a proposed Pacifica Bylaws Amendment between July 10th and August 24th of 2024. Information on the amendment, about how vacancies are filled on local station boards, and about the process will be posted on the pacifica.org website.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
Thank you to the following for providing food for our phone volunteers during our spring membership drive. Sabu Hakim, Vicino's Restaurant Italiano, Crown Caribbean Bakery, Lamont's Entertainment Complex. Thank you for supporting WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
The DC Black Fathers Matter Project, 5th Annual Father's Day Motorcade, Saturday, June 15th. The motorcade honoring black fathers will depart at 12 noon from the African American Civil War Museum at 1925 Vermont Avenue Northwest. Arrival is as early as 10:30 a.m. to participate. The motorcade will end at the Big Chair on Martin Luther King Avenue and V Street Southeast at approximately 1 p.m. DC residents are encouraged to display banners or posters in your neighborhood, community, or church. Beginning Friday, June 14th, in honor of Black Fathers. More info at 202-240-1182. That's 202-240-1182 or dcblackhistory.org. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
This is movement time, and when it's movement time, we can all be together.
Reverend Dr. William Barber,
We are here to announce that on June the 29th at 10 o'clock on Pennsylvania and 3rd, we are calling for the Mass Poor People's Low Wage Workers Assembly and Moral March on Washington and to the polls, June 29th, 2024. We're saying the last picture of D.C. ought not be people tearing the Capitol.